We are in Genesis chapter 10 and 11. We have beginning through the book of Genesis, and going through the book of Genesis, clearly as you see on the screen, we've gone talked already about the creation of the world, the creation of man. We've talked about the fall of man, with the entrance of sin. We've talked about Cain and Abel. And in the last 2 weeks, we've talked about Noble and the global... Noble. Sorry, I had Noble and Global together. Noah and Global together here. So we had Noah and the global flood. He was a noble kind of guy, too. So, anyways, but Noah and the global flood, and we used that, talked about that for 2 weeks to talk the two different issues. Today, we want to transition now into the next phase of humanity, if you would, because God has been interacting with humanity this entire time. We've kind of focused on these different things, but if you think about it, God is interacting. The whole foundation of the Bible, being the book of Genesis, is not just accounts to tell us what happened, history, but really, it's accounts that tell us how God interacted with man as well. God created man. God gave man a purpose, a function. God gave man a companion. Make sense? God also then interacted with man when man turned his back on God. He showed him grace. There was judgment, but there was also grace. God interacted with Cain. Even when Cain was rebelling in his heart, God was kind of coaching him and trying to encourage him. So God worked through the flood as well. And we talked though last week as well that God's desire was for man to what? Repent. But man would not repent. But God made a way to salvage man and as well as all the animals as well through that. So it's God's interaction, and we see the next phase of that as we go, as we leave Noah and we move into what we commonly refer to as the Tower of Babel. And I've got this graph up here, the map of the Middle East. I don't know how many of you have ever thought about the location of Mount Ararat and the Tower of Babel and that kind of stuff. And so I put this up here just as a transition point for you. Now, one thing we didn't talk about a lot was that, you know, there are people who believe that they've discovered what? The Ark, okay? The Noah's Ark. And you know, there's a couple different locations that they people are sure. You know, there's one guy found wood, did testing on it, and they did this big promo that it was it. They have the wood, they have these pellets and stuff like that. Well, if you've ever read Answers in Genesis articles and stuff like that, you'll know that one of the scientists from Answers in Genesis was asked to give some positive statements on it because they were compiling all these experts to make it look like it was real. But he asked them for the dating of it, and the dating was wrong. And so he said, I can't support this. You know, and so, but yet it's out there, and you know, you can look, and there's on the internet and stuff. There's this, you know, there's the wood that was found from the Ark of the Covenant, and these food pellets and different kind of stuff. But the dating of it is all wrong. And so, you know, according to at least the creationist scientists who would love to find Noah's Ark, you know, I mean, we'd love to have a testimony. They're saying, look, this isn't it. It's not what it is. And so, what it says in Genesis 9 is that the boat lighted on the mountains of Ararat, not on Mount Ararat. Okay, you can go look at that, okay? But that's a little bit different. In other words, it doesn't say a specific mountain. What it means is that there's a mountain range there, and there is, and that on one of those mountains in that area, that's where the boat lighted. Does that make sense? Okay, and so, but people are sure that it's on that one single mountain, okay? And so on and so forth. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Just those are just factoids for your brain. But that's the basic area that Ararat's at. Okay, on the eastern side of Turkey. Okay, and you can see it's actually very close to Armenia. Okay, right across the border and such. And it's directly north of Babil, okay, which is in Iraq, which is just south of Baghdad. Okay. And during the days of Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom, there was actually a camp that was put there, Camp Babylon, okay? And the ruins of Babylon are still there, okay? There's a lot of ruins that are there. There's a lot of debate going on in Iraq, even right now, with Babylon, okay? About how they're going to protect it because of all the antiquities that are there and stuff like that. And when as the U.S. pulls out, then the Iraqi forces have to be the one that protect all those antiquities, which people who don't have a whole lot of money like to get so they can sell them on the market. Does that make sense? Okay. So anyways, you can kind of see then where that is. Now, the reason that's important is because, again, we're transitioning from Noah getting off of the ark to the Tower of Babel. Okay. Now, that is at least 100 years, probably, difference. We know that Noah gets off of the ark when he was 601 years old. So I don't have these to put up there. Some, I'll put some of this up there next week when we do Abraham. But in 1657, in a Monday, okay, so the year of the world, 1657, it was when the flood was over. We're going to look at this a little bit later on. But in 1757 is when Peleg was born. Okay, Peleg's name means divided, okay? And we'll talk about that. And so many people believe that the earth had been divided already by Peleg's time, or it was happening at that time, and that's why his dad called him Peleg. So that's 100 years difference, okay? So within 100 years, man had transitioned from the mountains of Ararat down into what we refer to now as Iraq, into the plain of Shinar, okay? So they had traveled, and they had come into this plain of Shinar, okay? And so that's where we kind of pick up our account today. And so we read from Genesis 11, 1 to 9, that's the classical part where man's, you know, had one language, one people group, and they were looking at building a tower under the heavens. And so we're gonna look at this now from a practical point of view, and then we're going to look at it from a prophetical point of view, practically and then prophetically, okay? Practically speaking, the first thing we want to look at is man's disobedience to God's command. You say, man's disobedience to God's command. Where does this come from? Well, I want us to start off with Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, okay? Go back into this flood account, okay, where Noah's getting off the ark now, okay, and God is ready to bless Noah, and he gives Noah a specific command within this, okay? And just like Adam and Eve were given a specific command, and I believe that that command, that charge, was passed on to their children, so I believe the same thing is true with Noah. But in Genesis 9, verse 1, it says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Who did God, who did Yahweh talk to? Noah and his sons. Okay? So, all four of them, okay, were given this command. And what was the command? Fill the earth. In other words, what?
Have children and spread
the
out.
Spread out. That's right. It was the same thing that he told Adam. You know, Adam and Eve were supposed to multiply and fill the earth. Well, the earth, you know, all humanity was now destroyed, and so he turns to Noah and his sons and gives them the same command. Well, now turn to Genesis chapter 11, okay, where we read about this account of the Tower of Babel, and where we see that the people have come together, right, and they're building this big city and stuff, and read what it says here in verse 4, and it says, they said, come, let us build ourselves a city in a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we what? Lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Note what's being stated here. God specifically told man to do what? Scatter, spread out, fill the earth. But man decided, we like what? We like being together. And so, we don't think that's a good command. We don't like that one. And so therefore, we're going to do what we want to do. And so God had to come down in the midst of all that. Now we'll talk about the tower a little bit later on and the religious worship and that kind of stuff, okay? And so God, you know, was probably coming down with that as well. But we're not told that specifically at this moment. What God is seeking to break up, and we'll talk about this again in a moment, is this world order. But God comes down and he confounds languages. For one reason. What was the reason? So they couldn't stay together, so they had to obey his original command. They had to scatter. Now, this is reminiscent to me of something from the New Testament. And in Acts chapter 1, verse 8, Jesus told his disciples that they were supposed to stay in Jerusalem until the Holy Spirit came upon them. And when the Holy Spirit came upon them, they would be filled with power, and then they were going to be witnesses for him in Jerusalem, in all Judea, in Samaria, and into the uttermost part of the world. What does it say to you that he wanted them to do? Scatter. He wanted them to fill the earth. Make sense? Same concept. Well, what do we read happens in Acts 8, verse 1? Does anybody know that verse? What happens in Acts 8, verse 1? I always love this because it's 1:8 and then 8:1, the opposite. So guess what happens in 1:8 or 8:1? Persecution of the church. Because the opposite thing happened of what Jesus had wanted them to do. Jesus said, scatter, take my word, be witnesses throughout the world. They said, you know, we're really enjoying being in Jerusalem. We like being together. We've got thousands of people being saved. The work of God is going on. And so they kind of hung out in Jerusalem. And so God brought what? Persecution. He confounded their plans, if you would. And the church had to spread out. And as the church spread out, as it scattered, guess what they did? They fulfilled his command. They fulfilled his will. He told them, spread out. And so guess what? They did. And as they spread out, as they scattered, they gave testimony to the gospel. They became witnesses for him in Jerusalem and Judea and then Samaria and then to the uttermost parts of the world. And I ask myself, okay, so again, bring this back to Bob or to you. Put your own name in there. Don't pick on me. You pick on you. And how often is it that God gives you a task? Something that you know is true, maybe from his word or that he has just challenged you with in prayer or whatever. And you've said, but I'd rather do this instead. And has God ever had to redirect you? A lot of times he does that. A lot of times he does it in his grace and in his love. But a lot of times it is punishment. It is the chastisement that we read about. You know, God does it lovingly at times, but it's still what? It's chastisement. It's discipline. And God has to do that. And so I want to challenge us, you know, we think of the property, but, you know, and we say, okay, what about that? And we won't, you know, I've shared that, I think, last week, maybe turning testimony time or whatever, you know, with the Freddie Mac rejecting the offer and, you know, being told that if we just go up $5,000, we could have it. But, you know, the other point is we prayed about it. And if we felt very content about the amount that God said, then it's going, in my mind, going outside the will of God to raise it up and spend more money. Even though we could have it. While it could be, like many of you have shared in the past, over the months we've been waiting on this whole thing, maybe God wants us to have it for a lot less than what we originally thought. Or maybe it's a matter of timing. God doesn't want us to have it now. Does that make sense? And so, or maybe it's just that God doesn't want to have it at all. God forbid. Anyways, but that could be the answer. Does that make sense? And he's protecting us from ourselves or from something that property would be wrong for. So whatever those situations are, we don't know. We just know that we've got to follow the will that God has set forth for us. Does that make sense? Okay, so I want to challenge you. Now, that's us globally or as a body, okay? But what about you individually? What are you going to do? So, first of all, there was the disobedience to God's command. But secondly, then, practically speaking, and this is the one that we tend to focus on more, there's the division of the earth, division of the nations, of the peoples. And the first way we see that, very clearly we see it, linguistically, okay? That means with their languages, okay? But what I want to share with you, and I've got a lot of data today, and I don't know how much of this I'm going to be able to share, especially when we get the prophetic side. We'll probably just fly through that part of it. But a lot of fun stuff that I got as I was translating and as I was studying this. First of all, in Genesis 10, verse 5, and I have it up here, and you can read it in yours, okay? But it says, from verse 5, Genesis 10 says, from these, the coastland, and this is the... this is referring to the sons of Japheth, okay? Verse 5, it says, from these, the coastland peoples of Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, and I'll come back to the word in a moment, according to their families, into their nations, okay? Now, that's what it says in the New King James. Literally, okay, using those terms, it says, from these was divided the coasts of the people, a man to his tongue, to their families, into their nations. Now, why do I say all that? Well, because the word Lashon in Hebrew is the word for the tongue. Literally, the tongue. Okay? And so, as the practice is say is used in Greek as well. That's why, a little aside here, a little off teaching here, but like when we talk about the gift of tongues, and it talks about another tongue, well, it really is the term tongue, but it is translated usually what? Languages. And in Acts chapter 2, it's very clear that they were speaking other languages, but they're speaking with other tongues. And the word other is not even there. They were speaking with tongues. Okay? Well, same concept here, okay? So these people from Japheth, as Japheth began to scatter, okay, then as they scattered along the coastline, okay, then they began to speak with other languages, with other tongues, okay? And you can see that a man to his tongue, to the family, into the nation. And so it's giving us a what? A progression. Yes, exactly. Which you don't necessarily see in the New King James and stuff. But it's actually, as they started to divide, people started to kind of speak own languages. Now we're going to see how a lot of that started at the Tower of Babel in a moment, okay? But since they had different languages coming out of the Tower of Babel, it was very natural to do what? Congregate together with people that you can understand. I mean, very clearly, as we had that little illustration there, where we had, Chinese, Korean, German, Spanish, and was that Southern English? Or no, anyways. All being sang, songs being sung at the same time, very clearly, if you wanted to sing at that moment, you probably wouldn't have came up with Brian singing in Chinese, okay? Now, some of his family might have. I'm not sure. Anyways, but I certainly wouldn't have. I mean, it was all Chinese to me. And, and then son with Korean. Now, could you two understand each other? We think, oh, Oriental languages, No, they couldn't understand each other. Well, then you got Spanish and German. They're European languages, right? So clearly, Michelle and Jessica should have been able to understand each other, but no, that's not true at all. And then English is derived from them all, so very clearly Charles would have been able to blend with everybody. No, not at all. But if you wanted to sing, you'd probably hang out with Charles, because most of you speak some sort of English anyway. And so we blend together. But we're going to talk in a moment here about even in English, or even in German, or even in Spanish, or even in Chinese, or even in Korean, there are different what? Dialects, okay? And so, in Genesis 11, verse 1 now, see now in 10, in fact, I should tell you that in Genesis 10, verse 5, but we also have it in verse 20 and verse 31, this word lashon for language, okay? In all the chapter 10, when it's talking about languages, when you see languages, it's using the word lashon as the Hebrew word, tongue. But here in chapter 11, verse 1, we read, now the whole earth had one language in one speech. Here, the word language that is brought in English as word language is a different word in the Hebrew. It is the word sepheth, which is the word for the lip, which is translated as the dialect. And now, throughout chapter 11, no longer are we talking about a lashon, we're talking about a sepheth, okay, the lip. And so we're talking about dialects, but we don't read that here, okay? In verse 6 to 7, okay, which is the passage that we're talking about, and Yahweh said, indeed the people are one, and they all have one lip, dialect. And this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down, and they're confused, Belial, okay, their lip, that they may not understand, Shema, one another's lip, dialect. Dialect, dialect, dialect. Okay? Now, I can't say that I'm putting out a new theory here, okay? But I found it quite interesting that in chapter 10, when it's doing the overview, okay, of what happened after Noah and how the people groups moved out, the descendants of Japheth, the descendants of Ham, the descendants of Shem, and how they moved, that in each one of those times, it says the exact same thing, how they went out according to their language. But when it came to the Tower of Babel, when man was congregating with the one language, okay, with one purpose, seeking to stay together to defy God's command, and if you would, from my perspective. God came down, and it says that he gave them a twisting of dialects. Even a twisting of dialects is enough to what? Separate people. In China, Brian, I don't know, maybe you know this or not. Do you know how many different dialects within Chinese there are? There's two main ones, but even there, there are what? I was understood there was almost like 100. Is that true? Okay. And I think it's the same thing like in India, that when you get into the language over there, you have all these different tribes. And in each one of these different tribal groups, they have their own brand of Hindi, of speaking. And so when... like Wycliffe translators and people who go in and trying to bring in Bibles, they actually have to go beyond translating the Bible into languages. They have to translate it into specific dialects. Because you can get people who speak English together and you can't what? You can't understand them. If we had someone who is from Britain with us today, okay? Even though we may understand some of the words or whatever, I would butcher any kind of accent. I'd probably get Gabrielle to come up here. Which one do you like to do? Anyways, whatever. She likes to do some accent. And whatever it is. Australian or whatever. And but, you know, use certain different words. I mean, honestly, we had a couple in St. Louis when we were Desert Storm Duty who was across the hallway from us. And we'd have them over and play games together. And... we played Scattergories. You know, you guys know Scattergories. And I put sports equipment. I put knickers for sports equipment. Well, that's underwear to people in Britain. So, I mean, knickers for us is what? The knee-length pants, right? And underpants, yeah. And so when, you know, we had Kay and we came to sports equipment, and I said knickers, and they both looked at me, and the lady says, well, I guess that's sports equipment. And so, you know, now that's just a minor little thing, okay? That's just a word. But you get now somebody from Scotland, okay, who's speaking with a brogue or whatever. Is that Scotland? Who's the brogue or is that Ireland? So you guys figure it out, okay? Anyways, and you get all these people together speaking English with a different dialect. And guess what? You don't know. I mean, it's bad enough you get somebody from Boston, you know, with somebody from South Georgia or somebody from Alabama. Anyways, and you put these two people together, I mean, it could be fun listening to them talk, okay? Because they're speaking a different dialect. They may be speaking the same language, but it's a different dialect. In German, you got Hochdeutsch and Süddeutsch. I mean, you know, it's just, you got the High German and Southern German, but it's the lower person's German, okay? We got Ubonics. You know, I mean, but that's what? It's English. But, yeah, you say, it is. Okay? And so, God came in, and we're told that he confused their dialects. In doing so, they weren't able to communicate anymore. And man began to then scatter on the face of the earth. We have this division of man going on because of the language change. God came down and said, this isn't right. It's not my plan. This isn't my will. And so since they're not going to obey me, I got to what? I got to help them out. I got to step in, give a little motivation, a little change scenario happening here. And so could you imagine that day? You know, when Pedro is handing up to Hans, and I'm using those names purposely, the brick or the tar, and all of a sudden Pedro starts speaking, I'm going to use languages here, Spanish, and Hans is speaking German, you know, and that's why they'd be called Pedro and Hans, right? And so, and now that they don't know each other, they don't understand, you know, and one's asking something for each other, and it's, whether it's a dialect or a language, you know, they just don't get it. So they begin to what? They separate. Well, that happens in Isaiah 28:11. I forgot I wanted to share this up here as well. We're told prophetically by Isaiah that in the future, the day is going to come, it says, with a stammering lip, Sepheth, and another tongue, Lashon, Yahweh will speak Dabar to his people. And so I put that there because Dabar is used up in chapter 11 there as well in for one speech. It's really one word is the idea there. But God said that the day was going to come that he was going to use the confusion, if you would, of languages, babbling, as a sign to the Jews. When was that fulfilled? Acts chapter 2, Pentecost. That's exactly right. Because God then used the different languages and the different dialects of man to give glory and praise to God as a sign to the Jews. Okay? And so that's, you can see how those are being used. Okay? There. And so we bring it back up through. Well, we also have the division of the earth geographically. Geographically. Now, this is the one that, again, is of greater debate. But just as a quick review, we saw last week out of the blessings, if you would, and then the curses, that Japheth and Shem and Ham, there was a prophecy given to each of them. And we talked about how Japheth moved to the north and to the east. Okay, they became like the European nations, if you would. Okay, that's a generic statement. West. I say east. I'm sorry. Thank you. North and west. Okay. And so they moved up into like the European areas. Shem was going to move to the far east, to the east. And then we note that Israel was inserted back into the what we call the ancient Near East or the Middle East. Okay. And then Ham was going to be congregated in what we refer to as the Middle East and then into Africa. Okay. And those were those three people groups. And if you look at the different, you know, the people who came out of them, where they settled, those who they were. Okay. Now, I think that's given to us because I think what happens is that God works through those people groups when he confounds the languages. And so as he confounds the dialects or the languages, and as man begins to separate away from the plains of Shinar, okay, Babel, that as they separate out, we're going to see that God then also separates them out geographically. He causes there to be some geographical change as well. Genesis chapter 10, verse 25, okay, we read, in the beginning of his kingdom, that is 25, sorry. To Eber was born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Okay? Now, Peleg is the son's name. In Peleg, okay, means, if you look it up, means a river, a rivulet, or a gully. Okay? It is derived from the word palag. Okay? Palag, which means to be divided. Now, what you need to understand is that originally in the Hebrew, there were no vowel pointings. Okay? Hebrew was a triconsonantal language. Okay? Big term, which means what? Every word was made up of three consonants. There were no vowels. Okay? And so, it's really PLG, Pe, Lamed, Gimel. Okay? And so, it wasn't until the Masoretic texts from the 600 AD period when the vowel pointings were added. And they were added according to oral tradition. Do you understand? What was understood in the Hebrew. And so they began to put the vowel pointings in to make sure that things were protected. Okay? So, here's the deal. Peleg and Palag. What's the difference? Vowel pointings. One has a double E, one has a double A. Get rid of the vowels. In the original Hebrew manuscripts, they would look what? Identical. That's exactly right. They're PLGs. Make sense? Okay? And derived from the PLG stem, okay? So, in a concept, what PLG refers to is being divided by water. That's exactly right. Water. River, we would say, a gully, a rivulet, a stream, maybe. Okay? But water is kind of the concept that's happening here. And so, we see, oh, and I forgot to put this, the same concept comes over into Greek. Pelagos is a word which refers to a sea as well. And then it comes over into English. Note the PLG. PLG. Okay? Pelagos. Okay? And then we have archipelago. Does anybody know what an archipelago is? Good. It's islands. It's a group of islands, okay, surrounded by what? Water, divided by water. So it's a group of lands, if you would, that are divided by water. Pelagic. Anybody know what pelagic means? Having to do with the seas. Okay? So, we bring it all the way, PLG concept, all the way into English as well. Okay? Now, I put up here Pangaea and the hydroplate theory. Now, being divided by water. See, some would say that they think that in his days the lands were, the earth was divided. They would say it was divided by language. Okay? But I think because of the term that was being used, that clearly there must have been a division caused by water. Okay? I used to believe, okay, and not when I was an evolutionist, okay, because clearly I didn't believe in this anyways. But when I first started studying this out, I thought Pangaea really made a whole lot of sense to me. And does anybody know what Pangaea is? It's the dividing of the what? Of the continents, okay? And I really do believe that probably at some point there was the continents were probably put together. I think that when God created the earth and it was water and then dry ground appeared out of the earth, it was probably one large mass, okay? And I think that there was a period of time when they separated. And so I thought, well, you know, this makes sense to me that this division then would happen there in the earth, you know. But in studying this more, I realized, it was kind of a no-brainer. I thought, okay, so why did I think of that? What do you think would occur on the earth when the continental breakup happened? Do you think that would have been just a nice little drift? It was kind of like riding a surfboard over millions of years. You know, I mean, that's what evolutionists would have you believe, right? Okay, so if that happened, what would be happening on the earth? Massive earthquakes. And because there was massive earthquakes and total shifting of the plates, right? What else would be going on? Tidal waves. Water breaking up from the deeps. What does it sound like? It sounded like a couple chapters ago, didn't it? Yeah, it sounds like what happened at the flood. Okay? So I thought to myself, you know, that's right. It really does. So, but that, now you got to say to yourself what? Well, then what does this mean? Well, there are some smart creation scientists out there who have analyzed this thing. Okay, so I'm not going to tell you that I came up with this thing. That'd be a total lie. No. Anyways, I think very highly of Henry Morris, who's now passed away, and John Morris, who are with the Institute of Creation Research, as well as the guys from Answers in Genesis. But really, the original guys there are Henry Morris and John Morris. And John Morris now is the grandpa age as well. You know, he's not the young guy I knew when I was a young guy. He's an older guy now, and with gray hair, and probably has his kid growing up and learning this stuff to take over his place. But anyways, I was reading an article by him, and he was the first one who introduced me to this concept of the hydroplate theory. Okay, and what the concept here is, and I don't want to get into all this, just as a factoid, maybe get some interest. You may go out and Google it and read about this thing. Okay, is that after the flood, and while the water was recessing, okay, and you've got the ice age concept that's getting ready to start, that there was a changing in water levels that went on. And the water level was lower, and then it was going to wind up increasing. And again, I can't sit here and pontificate this for you, okay, because I don't have it all wrapped up in my brain yet. But that there was that period of time right after the flood that it was still a tropical environment, as it probably was before the flood. And there was no ice on the earth. It was all what? Water that was dropping, okay? And so then when the ice age began and all that kind of stuff, and as water levels began to then rise, because ice, you know, water does what when it freezes? It expands. It doesn't contract. It expands. And so as water levels then began to increase on the earth, after the flood, you know, after you have the recessing, then you have water levels then coming back up again. And now certain areas, unlike our lake, you know, hopefully one day the lake level will rise again. We were just out there last weekend or at the beginning of the week, and it's amazing how many dry areas I've never seen before are there, you know, but hopefully in a couple of years it'll raise up again and we won't see those dry areas again. But the same way, all of a sudden, those areas that used to be dry were now what? Filled with water. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, that's the hydroplate theory, okay? And so that then the earth began to be divided then by water, okay, by rivers that weren't necessarily there before. When they dammed up, good illustration here, when they dammed up the Savannah River, okay, three places, but let's pick on Clark Hill Dam first, okay? When they dammed up the Savannah River at Clark's Hill, what happened? It just made the Savannah River bigger? It made all the water tributaries what? Bigger. A lot of people like to fish on the what? Little river, which isn't what? Very little. It's massive. And it's hard to tell that it's you're really on a different tributary when you go onto it because it's massive. Well, it probably was referred to as the Little River years ago because what? It was little. Not because it was this massive river and somebody just decided, oh, let's just call this thing little. It was a little river, but now it's not. Do you see what I'm saying? So, same concept. Well, this is fun stuff. I don't know. I think it's fun stuff. Anyway, how's that? And you've got two maps up here. These are antiquities. And you can see the information here, okay? The one on your right, the one that's vertical, okay, is from 1513 by Piri Reis, okay? He was a captain, a boat captain, okay, who back at that time, they, I guess from what I read and I understand, is that they guarded their trade routes heavily, okay, because they didn't, it was competition, you know, business kind of thing. Makes sense. We guard our trade secrets. Well, this was their trade secret, okay? And Piri Reis had his own maps, okay? And on the back of this map, that's on, is it lambskin? I think it's lambskin it's on, okay? And so that's not papyrus or whatever. It's on skin, okay? And he look at the detail of this thing. I mean, we've got little ships on it. And if we blew this up, you can see those little animals and stuff like that on all this stuff, okay? And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that is in a moment. 1513. But on the back of the skin, he has it written that he made it from 20 older maps dating to 4 BC. That's the time of Jesus' birth. Now, 4th century BC. Oh, yeah. No, that's true. Not 4 BC. 4th century BC. So 400. 300 BC. That's exactly right. Okay. Now note what's on here. Do you see this up here? Not very well. Sorry. Look very close, or come on up if you're come on. It doesn't matter to me. If you're ophthalmologically challenged. Anyways, that's Spain. That's the Iberian Peninsula. Okay, coming into the Mediterranean Sea. This then is what? Africa. Over here we have the coast of South America. Here we've got the islands. And up here, if it was continued, we actually have the United States or the Americas. They actually already had it mapped out. The New World, the Earth was flat. Isn't this interesting stuff? And guess what's down here? The Antarctic. Now over here in 1531, Orontius Phineus did a large one, okay? And down into here, we have Australia, we have the tip of South America, and though it says Terra Australis, many believe that this is actually, this is Africa here, this is Antarctica. That's what it is. And there was a professor from Harvard, Hapgood, I think, Hapgood, anyways, who sent that to, sent these to Air Force group that was stationed down in the Antarctic. Okay, and this is all factual. Okay, you can go online and find. In fact, I think I saved his letters on my computer. Anyways, letter down to there, and the Air Force sent back their findings. This is back in 1961. That's when I was born. So this is, you know, ancient history, right? Anyways, not as ancient as this 1531 and 1513. But anyways, so they researched these things and they actually found the rivers. Now, again, this one, if we could blow this up, the details, there is actually, I think it's this one. right in here, there's an island there, and a little bitty island over here. I mean, if you blew this up, there's great detail on this thing. It's amazing. And know what else he has? See the lines? Longitudinal and latitudinal lines. Back in the, this is before Christopher Columbus, guys. Okay? Discovering the New World. Okay? And they're built based upon these maps that are way before Jesus' day. And they have the Antarctic. Here's the deal. They have the Antarctic without ice on it. With animals on it. With rivers in it. Not covered with ice. And that's why they sent it to the Air Force who was stationed down there. And they did the studies of what's under the ice. And guess what they found? That it was extremely accurate. And the one colonel said, they have to be real, based upon all, everything else that's there. You know, they're not frauds. They're not, okay, fakes. Because clearly, nobody, without the seismic kind of equipment, would know what was under the ice. So to know what was under the ice, the people had to what? Have explored it. They had to have seen it. Isn't that cool stuff? And so, if Noah knew how to build a big old ark, and his sons helped him, do you think people during those days knew how to build seaworthy vessels? Probably so. Do you think that they would be at least a little bit curious to what the earth was like after the flood? This is all conjecture. Understand? Okay? But the point is that there was a time on the earth when what? When the Antarctic wasn't covered with ice. And so as the earth, the ice age happened after the worldwide flood, and as the ice then, you know, began to settle in the water, and as the water levels began to increase, there's this great potential for this hydroplate theory that's going on. Cool stuff. Now, all that to say, can I prove that biblically? No, but what I can prove biblically is what? There was a time when the earth was what? One. And God divided it. God divided it linguistically, and God divided it geographically. How that transpired, I don't know. I can't prove that from the Bible. But it, this makes a whole lot of sense to me. Now, will we find other things out? Probably true. But when I saw these maps, when I was researching all this, I just thought, how profound that that there are people who had mapped out the Antarctic before there was ice. And does anybody know what they, how much ice they say is under the, is on the Antarctic? A mile. Up to a mile of ice. George. The Antarctic is growing. That's interesting. I didn't know that. But the Arctic is shrinking and the Antarctic is... The earth definitely is tilting. Not that way. Yeah. Or perhaps God has, since the flood, had the earth in a pattern that it would be in until the end days. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, we don't think about it. You know, scientists, all scientists can do is discover what God has already done. Does that make sense? Okay? And that's why I find this stuff really, really interesting. You know, I don't want to wrap myself and spend too much time. I haven't got enough time to spend. But this one, I would love, if I had time, I would love to spend more time on this stuff and just to check into it. Because that's really cool stuff, you know? I mean, to know thousands of years ago what could have happened. I saw a hand. Was it Don? South America had, there are a lot of debates on whether they really changed the rotations or not. And so there have been numerous massive earthquakes where people have wondered about whether, and. Wait, I don't know. Yeah, right. And clearly God has all these things orchestrated, you know? And yeah, well, and predetermined, but orchestrated, you know? I mean, it's going to go the way that God said it's going to go. You know, there's leeway in between it. I really believe that God has the permissive will and the decreed will. But the decreed will is going to what? It's going to be. It's going to be the way it is. So anyways, fun stuff. This is just fun stuff, okay? But encouragement stuff, I think, for us as believers to understand that there is science out there. There are facts out there that support what you believe. Do you understand? The secular scientists aren't pointing to this. Make sense? They don't want people to know that that happened in recent, relatively what they would consider recent history, because they think the Ice Age happened over what? Millions of years. How a mammoth didn't decay over millions of years, but rather was fossilized, we don't know, or saved. I mean, they have mammoths that have been, I mean, just saved. Isn't there like a mammoth that they found? Yeah. Several, you said, yeah. Okay, 1492. Okay, so maybe he had access to these. What did I say, 1692? Oh, it's before Columbus. No, you're right. It's right after Columbus, or at least at his day. So there's clearly enough evidence that Columbus knew that he wasn't floating on a flat Earth. You know, he wasn't looking to the end of the world. All right, so we got to move on. Let's look prophetically here, because we don't have time to do any of this. But I want to just tingle your ears with it just a little bit. And this is not to heap up teachers giving you itching ears. But prophetically, the Tower of Babel is extremely important. This is the beginning of the New World Order. This is the one world government. Okay? And so here in Genesis chapter 10, verse 8 to 12, what do we see? We see that Cush begot Nimrod, beginning verse 8 here. Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before Yahweh. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before Yahweh. In the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Kelna, in the land of Shinar. So this man named Nimrod began to build a kingdom. He was our first what? King. Okay? People, for some reason, looked to Nimrod and made him the ruler. Okay? And the first city he built was Babel. That was the center of his empire. Okay? And so he built these other cities as well, including Nineveh. Verse 11, from that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Ir, Kala, and Rezin. And between Nineveh and Kala, that is the principal city, so on and so forth. And so this man, Nimrod, began to have the first world empire, okay? Excuse me, and this world empire was focused in Babel, what we refer to now as Babylon. Now, you can read a lot of things about Semiramis, who was with him and became a part of it, but that's not biblical history. That's external history being brought into biblical history, okay? But we know Semiramis became a goddess, and many people worshiped Semiramis. Semiramis went on into other false religions, okay? And I'm not going to have time to do this when we go into Revelation, so I'm doing it here. I'm wasting my time now. But Semiramis, okay, the goddess Semiramis is pictured as a woman with the sun rays coming out from around her, okay? If you saw a picture, research this for me on it, okay? Check me out on this. It is the Statue of Liberty. Mary, we'll talk about later at some point maybe, but folks, the Statue of Liberty is Semiramis. Yeah, huh? It was a gift given to us from France. And it was modeled after the inscriptions and impressions that they have of Semiramis on coins and stuff. I know. Anyways, people, now you're looking at me like, ah, I'm un-American. Listen, it is just, we worship the goddess Liberty. Whether we like it or not, okay? And gods and goddesses have passed on through all these countries. Anyways, and it all starts with Nimrod, okay? And Nimrod brings us all together, okay, into this one world order where they had one political, one commercial, one religious system. And they would bring them together. And what does he do in 11 verses 1 to 9? He builds that little building there in Babel, right? He gets all the people together. They build this building. It's called the Tower of Babel, right? And Does anybody know what that tower was? It's a ziggurat. Okay, not a cigarette, but a ziggurat. And a ziggurat was built with multiple levels. Does anybody know what each level was for? To worship and sacrifice a different god or goddess. And so it was a riddle. And now listen, when you read about the towers in the Israel, like if you read about Israel and the cities, and they had these towers, okay, not all of them were religious, but many of them were. They were false. They were towers of false gods and false goddesses that they were bringing into the Israeli cities. It's a scary thing, okay? And we do the same thing. We've got to be careful that we don't do the same thing. So he has this one world order where, you know, they're going to have one language. They're going to have one political system. They're going to have one commercial system. They're going to have one religious system, okay? Keep that in your brain, right? Because in Isaiah 14, okay, and please go and check me out on these. We don't have time for this. But in Isaiah 14, this is the passage where there's a prophecy given referring to the king of Babylon. Now, what's really interesting about this is before Babylon ever became a world empire. Isaiah is prophesying about the king of Babylon and the destruction of the king of Babylon before Babylon ever becomes the world empire that it is. He's not talking about Nimrod. He's talking about the Nebuchadnezzar Babylonian empire. Okay? But in the midst of his prophecy against the king of Babylon, he turns around and calls out to who? Lucifer. Lucifer. And this is the passage where Lucifer says, "You have said in your heart, I will be like unto the Most High God," and that you sought to set up your throne to the north and stuff, right? The king of Babylon is always then seen to be then the personification of who? Satan himself. Because we're told that Satan is the god of this age, the god of this world, god of this age. He is the one who is seeking to set himself up as the king. When he was trying to tempt Jesus, what does he offer Jesus with? If you just bow down and worship me. All these things are mine. I'll give them all to you. I'll give all these things of the world to you. Lucifer, behind the scenes, is that king of the one world empire. Okay? And it's going to go on, right? And he's seeking to set it up. We'll talk about this in a moment. Fun stuff. So all the way back, Nimrod. Right? All these gods and goddesses that come out of this point. Who do you think was setting it all up? Satan. I think Satan knew that God was going to come one day. I think he knew that he was going to come as a child. And I think he was setting up his false religion so that when the Son of God came, people would say what? Oh, yeah, we've heard about that. You know, gods have a kid, da-da-da-da, comes to the earth. You know, they do the salvation thing for the people. Yeah. Similar story. Same, different nation, same story. Oh, yeah, it's a myth. And isn't that what we hear sometimes? You really believe that myth? No, this one is what? Fact. This one is true. Daniel, chapter 2, 31 to 45. In chapter 1 of Daniel, we read about him going to the land of Shinar. That's where Babylon was, okay? It continues on. But in chapter 2, we read about Nebuchadnezzar having a dream. And Daniel being the only one who could say what the dream was and then interpret the dream. And the dream was that there was this statue, there was this image of gold, the heads and to the shoulder, and then the arms and the chest was made out of silver. And then you had bronze abs and thighs, and then you had iron legs, and then you had feet made out of iron and clay mixture, right? And Daniel begins to tell him that there are going to be these multiples of world empires that come. The first one is going to be the Babylonian Empire. It's gold. It's the best. It's going to be the brightest of them all, the greatest, but it's going to go away. And another empire is going to come, which we know was Medo-Persia, and it's going to be broken into two, okay? The Medes and the Persians. And they're going to come, and they're going to destroy, and they're going to take over. And then after them, there is going to be this one that's going to have this, the fleet-footed, if you would. It's going to be Greece. Greece is going to come, and Greece is going to take over the Medo-Persians. And then there's going to be the Romans, okay? They're the iron ones that just crush everything. And then there's going to be this another one that's going to have mixed with iron and clay, have 10 toes, 10 kings. We read that in the book of Revelation. Okay? Anyways, it's one empire, pass down through. There's going to be the similarities of each of those empires that pass on through. Political, commercial, religious. Passing on through. And the gods and goddesses from the Babylonian Empire, all the way from the days of the Tower of Babel, have passed on through every single one of those. You go from the Babylonian Empire into the Medo-Persian, the Assyrian kind of times, and you go from Ishtar to Asherah. You can take it over into the Greek mythologies. You can take it over into the Roman mythologies where you have Juno. I should tell you that Ishtar and Asherah were the queen of heaven, right? And then I think it was Diana was the queen of heaven. Was it Diana? Who? Hera in the Greek. Okay. And then in Rome was Juno, okay, was the queen of heaven. And then you have, if you would, Christian mythology, where the Roman Catholic Church practiced what we call syncretism, and they blended together pagan religions and Christianity. And I think you have some of this on your sermon notes, maybe not. And where they blended them together, okay, and they gave Christian saint names to all the false gods. Okay, some people wear the Saint Christopher medallion, right? That's for traveling what? Mercies. Well, that's Hermes and Apollos. Hermes was Greek, Apollos was Roman. They were the gods of traveling safeties. Okay? Then you have Juno becoming Mary, the Queen of Heaven. In the large catechism of the Catholic Church, okay, I've read it. I have a lot of relatives who are Catholic and stuff, and I studied this out. She is literally referred to as the Queen of Heaven. She's the Mother of God. That comes all the way from Babylonian mythology. Okay? It passes on down through. So we have this image. Zechariah 5:5-11. You can read this later, but it's a prophecy regarding a time in the future when wickedness is going to be taken, placed in a basket. It's a female who's called wickedness, okay? Placed in a basket, a lead weight is going to be placed over the top of the basket, and she's going to be taken out into the land of Shinar, where she's going to build her building. Okay? Wickedness is going to reign. In the land of Shinar? I don't know, or whether it would be New York City. Anyways, then you have the book of Revelation, okay? And you can look at all these, where Babylon, again, when we're talking about the New World Order, we're talking about the beast and all that that's going to occur in the future, it's referred to as Babylon. Not referred to as Rome. People say, oh, well, they wouldn't have used Rome because that would have been really, that's why they said Babylon. No, because it goes all the way back prophetically to Genesis chapter 10 and 11. Because God was already recording for us how life was going to happen. And there was going to be this continual vein that was going to run throughout history all the way to what will be in the future. Well, in that, we see the same thing holding true in the book of Revelation, where there's the political Babylon, there's the commercial Babylon, and the religious Babylon. Okay, we have the whore who rides the beast, the eight heads. Okay, a lot of people think seven heads, there's really an eighth head on it, okay, with the ten horns and such. Phenomenal, interesting reading. Okay? So this passage, which seems like, okay, just a little story that we teach the kids, has such great prophetical importance to us at all. But I got to end it, okay? There's more. If you want to talk some more about it, I got a lot. I can talk to you about that. But the question is, how faithful are we to obey God's will? Again, God gave Noah and his sons the plan. I think that they passed it on to their children. And this is not against my kids. It's against your kids, because it wouldn't be against my kids, of course. It's against all of our kids. We've got to be careful. Listen, it's very easy for children of believers to become what? Apathetic. Lethargic. Because they haven't interacted with God in the same way you did. You were from the other side of the railroad tracks. You know how God delivered you. They don't understand that. It's just, they're looking at the world sometimes, and the world is enamoring, and they think you're just keeping them from the fun that you had when you were a kid. Okay? I'm not saying that they're all like that, but understand that your children and my children are just like we are. They're sinners, and hopefully they're saved by grace if they know Jesus Christ as their Savior, but they're still what? They're still sinners. They still have a selfish part that's within them, and they still want to please themselves and not God. Okay? Just like we struggle with. Only they're going to struggle in the right. Well, we see in the from the nation of Israel, it took two generations for them to turn away from God. We see it from Noah as well. It didn't take very many generations. Listen, this is less than 100 years. Noah was 601 years old when he got off the ark. Does anybody know how old he lived to? About 930. That means he lived for another 300 plus years. So within 100 years is when the Tower of Babel happened. That's only a generation or two back then. Okay? I mean, it didn't take very long for people to turn away from God, even when Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth are still on the earth. Do you get it? Amazing. Amazing. And those people who did it, think about it, this is kind of, and I don't mean this against younger people, okay? They were relatively younger people. Because everybody who came off the ark was what? Older. They were the dads and great. And so now all of a sudden you have them starting to have kids, okay? And these were the ones who were under 100 years old. That's me. I'm a kid. I'd love to live back then. Anyways, and so, but today we understand that, okay? When you're in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you have wisdom that comes from what? Living. Experience. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with 20s and you know, you teenagers in 20s and even 30s at times. Okay, I don't mean that, so don't take this wrong. But many times, younger people tend to neglect the what? Wisdom of the older people. And that's exactly, amen, this is exactly true. It's never changed. Do you get it? And so they don't want to listen. How about us? Are we seeking to build God's kingdom or our own? You know? I mean, that's what they were doing. They weren't worrying about God's kingdom. They weren't worrying about spreading out like God told them to do. They wanted to build their own thing. What about us? I'm worried about that with the property. It's my continual prayer, Lord. I don't want that to become a focal point. I want it just to be a tool that we use for your kingdom's glory. I don't want it to be the focus that we're building our own kingdom. That's all about us. We just want to get bigger and bigger and bigger because we just feel good about ourselves. Like we're really succeeding because we're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But no, have my eyes focused on God's kingdom. Whose system are you investing in? Are you investing in God's kingdom or the world's kingdom or world system? Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your love. I thank you for your goodness to us. You alone are God. You alone are the Most High. And I praise you and I thank you for who you are. Lord, I thank you as well that you have worked within us, that you have given us salvation through Jesus Christ in spite of ourselves. And as we look back in the times of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel, Lord, these generations that after Noah and his sons came off the ark, Lord, I know that if I was back then, I might have been following the crowd just as they did. And so I don't look back seeking to judge and condemn. But Lord, I want to learn that lesson and to be careful for my own self. Lord, I pray that you would help us to seek to be pure. Lord, I pray that as the days come when the new Babylon is raised up, Lord, that you would cause us to be prepared, that we would serve you and to not turn to the world system. We ask this day in Jesus' name. Amen.